Okay, first of all, welcome everyone. What we're trying to do here is not go through everything. That would take weeks. There's a reason that Chazal said that 30 days before Pesach is when you were supposed to prepare for Pesach, because they understood that Pesach takes a lot of preparation. It doesn't mean that every Yontif takes preparation, but Pesach takes even more preparation. So we are, in this year, it's really about information, explanation, and providing a little bit of clarity. Pesach, interestingly enough, is the only Yontif where there are halachos. There's a Yontif before the Yontif. Erev Pesach, from Chatzos on Erev Pesach, is actually a quasi-Yontif. You're not supposed to get a haircut unless you forgot, but L'chatchila, you're not supposed to get a haircut after Chatzos on Erev Pesach. It's a Yontif because that's when they shechted the Korban Pesach. And you even have halachas having to do with Pesach, that you make a bracha on bedikas chametz already the night before. So Rabbi Weinberg said what it's showing you is that you cannot celebrate Pesach properly without preparation. Pesach is a yantif that without preparation, sometimes obviously preparation always helps, but in Pesach there's halachos of preparation. And therefore, it shows us, he says, that Pesach takes real preparation. Pesach is also, as we all know, can be very anxiety-provoking. There's a lot to remember, a lot to do. And that's really the purpose of this year, hopefully to remove some of the anxiety. It doesn't mean I can't remove the work, but if things are a little clearer in terms of what we have to do, we can all take a deep breath and know that we're gonna get through this. I always begin with a Dvar Torah, not in Halacha, Dvar Torah from one of my favorites, Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, who the world certainly misses, his insights and his creativity. But he says that when the Jewish people went down to Mitzrayim, the Torah says, Chashir ya'nu oso ken yirbev v'chein yifrotz. The more the Jewish people were oppressed, the greater they became. They increased and they spread out, meaning they increased quantitatively and qualitatively. And Rabbi Sacks says that really is the essence of Judaism, that what has built the Jewish people is that we haven't asked for it, but our life as Jews has been challenging. And I'll read you a line because it's so powerful. Jewish history is not merely a story of Jews enduring catastrophes that might have spelled the end to less tenacious groups. It is that after every disaster, Jews renewed themselves. They discovered some hitherto hidden reservoir of spirit that fueled new forms of collective self-expression as the carrier of God's message to the world. Every tragedy begat new creativity. And then I always think of that coming into Pesach. It is, I think, the most difficult yantif to prepare for. It's a difficult yantif to go through. There's a lot of work, right? Usually there's things that you have to do. Here you also have to get rid of things, right? It's a lot of work, a lot of things to think about, cooking and cleaning and preparing. And you see, if Chazal said it takes 30 days to get ready, they understood how much work. But I think what they understood is if you want to get something out of a holiday, you have to put a lot into the holiday. And I think whatever you put into this yantif is really going to be what we get out of the yantif. I also always say at the beginning, you can sometimes lose the forest for the trees, right? There's a lot of details, the cleaning and the cooking, but always important at the beginning and throughout this yantif season to think and focus on what it's all about, what is important, to think about family, to think about Jewish survival, to think about what it means to be a Jew. And, you know, never lose sight of that. Obviously, the shear of the matzah matters. You can't have any chametz in your house. But really, it's about connecting to our heritage in a meaningful way. It's about thinking that we're doing something that Jews have done for thousands of years and hopefully will continue to do, Ad Bias Goel and beyond. Every yantif, as I mentioned from Rabbi Sacks, is a challenge. Every yantif, therefore, is an opportunity. Pesach is the greatest challenge, so Pesach is the greatest opportunity. The home is where, obviously, we're cleaning and we're cooking. And you see from the very beginning of Yetzias Mitzrayim's story, long before they went out, on the 10th of the month, and really we start celebrating then. It's called Shabbos HaGadol, is to remember Shabbos, which was the 10th of the month that year. They brought a sheep into their house. And it seems to me that Hashem wanted to say, this Yetzias Mitzrayim is about your home. It's not just about redeeming the Jewish people, it's about redeeming the Jewish home. And that's why it started in the home. They put some blood on the doorpost of the home, right? It was in the home. They celebrated that first Pesach as a family. And that's why Pesach is it's the Yontif where our Mesorah is transmitted through the generations. And what's interesting to think about, one of my favorite Divrei Torah is from Rav Meilich Biederman, a great mashpia in Bnei Brak, and he says that the attitude that you bring to this Yontif is as important as the food you bring, as the Divrei Torah you bring, the attitude, the level of excitement versus anxiety. So if the attitude is that, you know, we're going to get through this, it might be difficult, but we'll make it, that's very different than, I can't believe we have to do this again. So this is really a time period. I'm really talking to myself because I have a lot to do, getting ready to take deep breaths and to make sure that we're still smiling as we prepare, and certainly as we take on the Avoda of Pesach. Rav Meilich Biederman has something that I think about every year. He says that when the Rasha says, Maha Avoda Hazos Lachem, and most people say Avoda, he's talking about the Karban Pesach or the Seder. So what is he saying, Maha Avoda Hazos Lachem? What did he have to do already? Rav Meilich Biederman says, it's not so hard, right? That son probably didn't cook anything. He probably didn't clean anything. We're asking him to drink some cups of wine and to eat a meal that somebody else prepared. Why are you complaining? So he says, unbelievably, that the Rasha says, Ma avoda azos lachem. Like, why are you doing this? You don't look happy. That's what he's saying to them. He's saying, you look miserable as you prepare. You know, you look miserable as you're going through this. Why are you doing this? Ma avoda azos lachem. And basically, the answer has to be, hopefully, the answer is that we're doing this because we love it, because it means something to us, because as difficult as it is, there's nothing we'd rather do. Rav Moshe Feinstein famously said, and it's printed in two places in his Darash Moshe, that a generation of American Jews were lost because they heard too much complaining from the past generations who said, Shver zu sein a Yid, it's difficult to be a Yid. So Rabbi Sachs says, well, what's the answer? It is difficult. He said, not to pretend that it's not difficult, but to convey that as difficult as it is, it's totally worth it. There's nothing we'd rather do. We feel proud and privileged to be able to live lives of meaning and work hard in something that has lasting results. We're now going to start with the halacha. That's just an intro, a little bit to think about how important our attitudes are in coming into this day. The first thing we do is clean for Pesach. That is part of the mitzvah of Tashbisu. Tashbisu means that when Chatzos comes on Erev Pesach, you have to make sure that you do not own any chametz. And the goal is biur chametz, to destroy chametz. And here it's important knowing, obviously, we're going to get into what chametz is. It's things that are made from the five grains that have fermented or their derivatives. But chametz, according to the mystical sources, represents the Yetzer Hara and represents bad midos. I heard a beautiful practice from Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg that we've been doing in my family for the last 5 years since I heard it from him. And that is the 10 pieces of bread that you put out during Bedikas Chametz, we label them with bad midos. So we label them with, you know, arrogance and anger and sinas chinam and lashon hara. But in his words, you shouldn't just get rid of the bad mida. We need to learn to replace the bad mida with a good mida, to replace negativity with joy, arrogance with humility, anger with forbearance. And again, it comes down to the mindset that we're supposed to, on Pesach, get rid of the chametz and bring in the matzah. Chametz is Yetzer Hara, get rid of the Yetzer Hara, and matzah represents simplicity and meaning and basics and focusing on what's important. Bedikas Chametz is not supposed to be, in cleaning for Pesach, is not supposed to be spring cleaning, although it's not, you know, within reason, as long as it's not too anxiety-provoking, it's not bad. I quote the last couple of years since I read it, Marie Kondo's The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up and her book Spark Joy, and she talks about the fact that a clean house is representative or helps make an organized mind and an organized life. So organization is important. It's certainly in line with what we're trying to do, but that's not the ikar din, that is not the halacha. Bedikas chametz represents Yetzer Hara and all of that, and we go to extremes in our battle with Yetzer Hara. So it is a time to do some soul searching and spiritual inventory, but really, al pi ikar din, dust and dirt and garbage does not need to be burned. Really, what is chametz is bal yira bal yamatzah. You're not allowed to own any chametz or mixtures of chametz. You're not allowed to eat it. You're not allowed to own it. You're not allowed to benefit from it. We'll speak for a few minutes. I did a shiur on Shabbos about animals who need to eat chametz. If your animals need to eat chametz, that also is a complicating factor. You're not allowed to feed your animal chametz. You're not allowed to ask someone else to feed your animal chametz. And it's complicated if your animal needs to eat chametz, how to sell the animal. So if anybody has those questions, contact me privately. The best thing is to try to find a feed for your animal that is kosher for Pesach. What is interesting, and I think a little bit anxiety-provoking when it comes to Pesach, is that Chazal said that even a mashu, usually we have a concept of bittel, so a little bit of milk falls into your chaland, hopefully it doesn't happen, it's bittel. You can't see it, it's as if it doesn't exist. Chametz is aser b'mashu. Even a negligible amount is not allowed to be eaten on Pesach. A negligible amount is bittel in terms of ownership. So if you have some crumbs that, you know, in a car that you're not planning on using, you don't have to worry about that. If you have some crumbs in an area that you're going to be eating in, you got to worry about that. So what is the enemy coming into Pesach? Chametz. Chametz is the enemy. Chametz is five types of grains and their derivatives: wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. There is something called kitnios. Kitnios is not chametz, but Ashkenazi Jews, Siman Taf Nun Gimel, records a practice dating back 800 to 900 years in Ashkenazi communities that we do not eat kitnios on Pesach. Kitnios, they're translated as legumes. They are things that either many times they were manufactured or grew near chametz, and therefore there was a legitimate concern that people would eat it by mistake, eat chametz by mistake together with those things, or sometimes there was a concern that people processed them similar ways to processing chametz and people would get confused. So that is the reason for kitnios. We're not 100% consistent, because if we were consistent, we wouldn't have potato starch and therefore we wouldn't be able to eat potatoes. The Nishmas Adam brings this up, because potatoes, from potato starch, you make all sorts of things that look like flour, right? And if that was the original concern of kitnios, why are we allowed to eat potatoes? The Jewish people never accepted an isser on potatoes, because they would have starved to death. And therefore, even though we're a little bit inconsistent, we stay away from the types of things that the Jewish people stayed away from, some of them for 800 years, some of them like peanuts and corn are more recent chumras that the Jewish people took on. So chickpeas, rice, beans, lentils, tofu, peas, poppy seeds, sesame seeds, sunflower seeds, string beans, peanuts, right? That is, Ashkenazi Jews do not eat that on Pesach. But, however, you are allowed to own it on Pesach. And you are allowed to give it to somebody who's sick or elderly or babies who need to eat formula that has kitnios. That is okay. You just have to verify with the kashrus agency that there is no chashash chametz, that anything is pure kitnios. And the kashrus agencies have lists of formulas and lists of different things that sick or elderly or babies need to eat that you can verify it's only kitnios. You are allowed to own kitnios. And here's another kula that I like, based on Rav Avadya Yosef and Rav David Feinstein. Kitnios are not chametz. And therefore, because it's not chametz, it is batal berov, not just beshishim. So kitnios is batal berov, meaning you are allowed to eat in the home of a Svardi who has just used their pots and pans to cook rice. You're not allowed to eat rice or their rice or even something that is mixed with rice, because most probably it won't be batal, but they just cook rice in a pan and then 10 minutes later they cook soup in that pan. So you wouldn't be able to eat from that pan if non-kosher had been cooked or if chametz had been cooked, but if kitnios has been cooked, you're okay, and therefore you can eat in the home of somebody who eats kitnios and use all of their utensils. No problem at all. You just cannot eat. You cannot eat kitnios. So we said chametz is anything that is processed or derivatives of the five grains. What we do is our homes are filled with chametz, right? Our pantries are filled with chametz. So we have two ways of getting the chametz out of our rishus, out of our ownership. The first is called bittul chametz. Bittul chametz is a mindset which we verbalize, that we say we do not want to own chametz on Pesach, and this works because it's aser bahana, it's aser, you're not allowed to own it. So this is enough to take it out of our property. But the rabbis didn't think that was enough. They were concerned. Number one, if somebody has a really fancy bottle of scotch and he said, I don't want to own it, maybe he didn't mean what he said. Number two, what if it's sitting in his fridge and he goes into his fridge to take orange juice? He might be tempted or may not be thinking and take something that is chametz. So the rabbi said it's not enough to just nullify your chametz, say that it's meaningless to me, I don't care about it, it's afra da'aretz, like the dust of the earth. They also wanted you to destroy the chametz. And therefore, they required both bittul and bedika and bi'ur chametz. Bedika and bi'ur chametz is one process. You search and destroy. Search and destroy chametz and also nullify any chametz. So the two reasons that you need both bittul and bedika, maybe I won't be mevatel b'lev shalem, maybe I won't mean it, and maybe I'll be tempted to eat it, or I'll eat it because I'm just not thinking. Later on, it's unclear when this happened, another chumrah, we'll call it, was added. It's not in the Gemara, it's not in the Rishonim, but it's called mechiras chametz, which everybody is encouraged to do, even if you don't think you have any chametz, and you've done bedikas chametz, and you did bittul chametz, we also do mechiras chametz. And just a little history, in 3 minutes, mechiras chametz has its roots in the Tosefta. But in the old days, people did not have storehouses and pantries filled with chametz. So once in a while, a person ended up with more chametz than they wanted to get rid of, and they would sell it to somebody. What happened was, in the 1800s, Jews started owning taverns, and therefore they had all this alcohol and beer, and that they needed to, it would have been a serious loss. So they started selling chametz, and people also, as things changed and people started storing, you had preservatives, and we live much more luxurious culture and our pantries are stocked. So then you started having formal mechiras chametz, and at some point, the poskim, Rav Elyashiv and Rav Nassim Gishtetner, said everybody should do mechiras chametz because we have things in so many places. In the old days, in the shtetl, you were in your home or you were in the shul. You didn't have offices and different, a cubby in shul and you know, a locker in school. And so now that we have so many places and so much chametz, the rabbis of our generation say you should do three things now. Nullify your chametz, search and remove chametz, and also sell your chametz. So when we sell chametz, we put all that chametz away. So really what you're doing when you're doing bedikas chametz is you're looking for chametz in places where you haven't put it away and marked it off. There is a chumrah not to sell what's called chametz gamor. I don't discourage selling chametz gamor. If a person doesn't want to, they don't have to. But it's the sale. I believe in the sale enough that I do not discourage people selling whatever chametz they want. They should know it's a real sale. It is a real sale. The non-Jew has a right to take all your stuff and pay you fair market value. Nobody should think that I'm definitely getting this back, right? It hasn't happened. It's not common, but it has happened before that a non-Jew has taken stuff. But when you sell your chametz, you need to have in mind he can keep these Cheerios, he can keep this bottle of scotch or whiskey or whatever it is, because it's a real sale. If somebody does have a personal minhag not to sell chametz gamor, they can be in touch with me or look in the Star K list about what is chametz gamor. Like beer is chametz gamor, bread is chametz gamor, cake is chametz gamor, barley just is not chametz gamor. And some cereals are, some cereals are not. I'm not going to belabor this point because most people I know do sell chametz gamor, but if somebody has that chumrah, I would not discourage them from keeping a personal chumrah, and they can look at the Star K or be in touch with me to find out what is chametz gamor. It's just, there's a lot of details to that. All chametz that a person sells needs to be put away because we lease that area to the non-Jew. We don't just want the non-Jew's chametz in your house. We want the non-Jew's chametz in his property. So we lease the closets and the pantries, etc. And therefore, lichatchila, all the chametz that's put away should be in drawers, in pantries, behind walls, or not just curtains, or in a box. If you have a lot of stuff and you want to keep it in the fridge, you can put it in the crisper and seal that off, or you can put it in a box, but it shouldn't just be, you know, in a bag somewhere or in a corner somewhere. All the chametz that you sell needs to be in a separate, its own section. It's important to know what needs to be searched and what doesn't need to be searched, because although Pesach is the yantif where we actually look for chumras, it's called Chumra de Pesach, something that was popularized by the Arizal, there are limits because, number one, you shouldn't impose a chumra on others. Number two, there is a mitzvah in Shulchan Aruch and Siman Tavkov Chavtes, Chayav Adam Leo Sameach V'tov Lev Bamoed. A person, a Jewish person, men, women, and children, right? Hu v'ishto v'anav v'chol anavim elav. Everybody has a mitzvah to be happy on Yantif. If you have gone crazy on your Pesach cleaning, it will be very hard to fulfill this mitzvah. So number one, you only need to check in a place that you suspect that somebody has brought chametz into that place. So if there are little kids in that house, you have to suspect every place. But if there's no little kids in the house or certain rooms were blocked off, and you know you never bring chametz into that room, absolutely no obligation. This is Mefurish and Halacha Tafla Med Gimel Gimel. Bode kolam ekomos sheyesh lachush shamei chnisu b'am chametz. You only search the places where you have to suspect that you have put chametz there. And the Mishnah Brura clarifies that a place that mistama ein machnisim b'am chametz, that your assumption is that you haven't ever brought chametz, you do not need to check there. Therefore, some five well-known places that people ask me about: crawl space. No chametz in a crawl space, an attic. Behind the refrigerator, it might be good to do that anyway. You do not need to check behind the refrigerator. Under the oven, on the ceiling fan, different things that people have asked me. You do not, nobody brings food there. You don't have to assume anybody brought food there. Do not need to check for these halachos. You can check because you want to do a spring cleaning, but not for Hilchos Pesach. You do not need to move heavy appliances, even if you know there's chametz there. That's also in halacha. You also do not need to check a place that you are planning to, and this check means the night we do bedikas chametz, if you've already sold your chametz and you marked off, I'm going to, you don't even need to tell me, you say, this room, I'm closing off. I'm not going to use this room at all. You can just put a piece of tape to close it off. You'll need to remember that whole room goes to the non-Jew. All the chametz in it, if it exists, goes to the non-Jew. You do not need to check a place that you plan on selling to the non-Jew, right? You've already set up arrangements to sell this to the non-Jew. You know about it. What are you going to be bodek? You're going to check and search. I know it's there. I've already sold this or made arrangements to sell it. Any appliances or dishes that you're not going to use for Pesach, you can just close them off and put them away. You do not need to clean them. Areas that you are using, you need to, and especially for food prep or eating, you need to be much more careful. Here, it's important to clarify that there's a halacha, also Shulchan Aruch, Mefurish, and Taf Mem Beis, Sif Beis, that anything, even bread, not, you know, a bread derivative, bread that spoiled, v'nifsala mile'achol hakelev, eino chayev levayer. So it becomes spoiled enough that a dog wouldn't eat it, you do not need to destroy it, meaning it can be sitting in your house because it's no longer edible, it's no longer food, therefore it's no longer chametz. And that's why I always point to the page, I don't have the page this year in my notes, but the page in the OU book, it used to be, last year was page 117, that aluminum foil and aluminum foil baking pans and baby ointments and bags, paper or plastic, body wash, bowl and tub cleaners, candles, cardboard, carpet cleaners, charcoal, cheesecloths, conditioners, copper and metal cleaners, cork, cosmetics, we're going to say except possibly for lipsticks, cupcake holders, cups, deodorants, detergents, dishwashing detergents, drain openers, fabric protectors, furniture polish, glass cleaners, hair gel sprays and mousse, hair removers and treatments, hand sanitizer, insecticides, jewelry polish, laundry detergents, lotions, napkins, oven cleaner, paper towels, perfumes, plastic containers, plates, paper, plastic, or styrofoam, scouring pads and powders, shampoo, shaving cream and gel, shaving lotion, silver polish, skin cream, soaps, suntan lotion, talcum powder, toilet bowl cleaner, water filters, all of that is inherently, they consider, OU, that it is not a rai l'achilas kalev. A dog would not eat it. Something that is just crumbs. So unless it's the type of thing, let's say a Cheerio. A Cheerio is less than a kazayas, but it's important enough that you do have to worry, you know, that somebody might eat it. But otherwise, if it's just crumbs and it's not in an area where you think somebody may eat it, you don't have to worry about it. There is a chumrah to any even crumbs, because maybe a bunch of crumbs together will join together. Your house will be mitzaref them. That's the shita of the chayadim and the chazanish. But me'ikar adin, crumbs are not the problem. So you have, and certainly if you're selling, so you know you have crumbs in the back of the trunk of the car and you didn't have time to vacuum it. So you don't have to worry about it. Number one, if it's a problem, you sold it. And even if you didn't sell it, it's just crumbs, it's considered batal. Okay, things that people need to be aware of that are really chametz, that are around a lot of houses, is Play-Doh. Play-Doh is chametz. Play-Doh is real chametz. And so a lot of, if there's Play-Doh with people's toys, where kids or grandkids, nieces, nephews, great nieces, great nephews come to play, you have to make sure there is no Play-Doh, right? You can't own Play-Doh on Pesach. They're not allowed to play with it, and certainly you don't want them eating it. Another important thing, benchers. Benchers need to be put away with chametz. They're just around chametz too much. There's a lot stuck to benchers, falling out of benchers. And therefore, I would not say clean your benchers and use on Pesach. I would say benchers, you put away. Svarim, on the other hand, if there's a sefer that you know you bring to the table, we don't treat them like benchers, at least from what I see. And therefore, a sefer that you know you've brought to the table, and you really should clean it before Pesach, especially if you're going to bring to the table again on Pesach. And some people don't bring svarim that were on their chametz table to their Pesach table. Pockets are an important place to clean. Pockets, you know, people do stick a cookie in their pocket, a lollipop in their pocket. I find lollipops I'm the candy man in shul, so I find lollipops in my pockets. That's probably only kitnios, but you gotta check your pockets. Bedikas chametz works as following. The really bedikas chametz in the old days was when they cleaned. Remember, they lived in one room houses that were partitioned, and therefore cleaning was during bedikas chametz. They would clean. They didn't have a lot. And nowadays, It's you can't really do it in most the way most of us live on one night after Tzeis HaKochavim. So we clean leading up to it, and then when we start Bedikas Chametz, we're really the job, the way Rav Eliashiv describes it, is you're an inspector. You're making sure the room was cleaned properly. Hopefully by then things were already cleaned, and now you're just doing a spot check to make sure things were done properly. The Bedikas Chametz is supposed to be done with a candle. A flashlight is fine. Some say it's even preferable. Some people are traditional. They start, they make a bracha holding the candle, and then they transition into the flashlight. Anybody who has an office, unless the office is very close by, like mine, I check my office right after I check my house. If you don't live within a mile, you check your office the last time you leave before going home that night, usually the night of the 14th. Tonight, this year it's the night of the 13th because Erev Pesach falls out on a Shabbos. So on Thursday, when you leave the office, and this year more people are in offices than they were last year, unfortunately, because of the Doge people. So Thursday, before you leave your office, you want to look around, put stuff away, and then you don't need to go back and do a Bedikas Chametz unless, again, it's very close to your house. There is a strong minhag from the times of the Rishonim that when you do Bedikas Chametz, the night of Bedikas Chametz, meaning the halacha is if you're leaving earlier than the night of the 14th or this year, the night of the 13th, when we make a bracha, you do it the last night that you'll be home, but without a bracha. Whenever you make a bracha on Bedikas Chametz, the minhag is to put out pieces of bread, right? From the Rishonim, they don't say how many. The custom developed to put out 10. Some say 10 is keneged the 10 sons of Haman. That's a mystical comment. But the minhag is that when you do Bedikas Chametz with a bracha, some even have this minhag when there's no bracha made, you put out 10 pieces of bread. The 10 pieces of bread ensures that you will find something, and that's the origin of this minhag, that people were concerned. Some of the Rishonim were concerned, you're making a bracha, what if you don't find anything? So the answer is, you're making a bracha on the process. But they were concerned, we put out the 10 pieces of bread. Later, the Chalkas Yaakov and others said, well, it also, when you know you're looking for something, you look harder. That's what he said. Others actually argued and said, when you find that piece of bread, you stop looking because you know you're only looking for the pieces of bread. You're really supposed to be inspecting the room, not just the bread. So again, this year the mitzvah Bedikas Chametz is the night of the 13th. That's Thursday night. You make a bracha, al biur chametz. You look for chametz. You put out your 10 pieces of bread in advance. And then we'll be burning them on this year on Friday morning. That is the mitzvah of Bedikas Chametz. Now we're going to, that's hopefully, you know, we get through that. No chametz in our houses, but what we do have, the chametz that we do have in the houses that we need to get rid of, if you're going to be cooking in your house and eating in your house, you got rid of all your crumbs. There's a concept in halacha called ta'am. Ta'am is taste. Taste is absorbed in the walls of pots and pans and ovens and utensils. And that is what we're going to spend the next 15 minutes on, the concept of koshering. What we call koshering is taking, how do we remove this ta'am? So you can have a perfectly clean pot that somebody just used for something not kosher. You don't see anything, right? It's spotless. It went through a dishwasher 16 times. In halacha, we say that it has tam. And the rabbi said that tam will linger forever. After 24 hours, it's called tam pagum. But when it comes to Pesach, we're machmir with tam pagum. So chametz taste in the walls of your pots and pans lingers forever. And before you cook in that, you need to remove that. So that is what koshering is about, removing the chametz taste from your vessels, from your pots and pans, utensils, and your ovens, etc. Okay? So on the Torah level, after 24 hours, the taste is meaningless. The rabbi said, it's playing with fire. People are going to forget, and therefore it's called eno ben yomo atu ben yomo, a pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours, you're not allowed to use because maybe if you'll get confused and you'll use a pot that has been used within 24 hours. And on Pesach, it doesn't matter because we're machmir, even as I mentioned, on a mashehu is not batal, and even tam pagum, even taste that is not good taste anymore after 24 hours is still a problem. So for our purposes, we're trying. Kashering means to get rid of that taste. There's a fundamental principle in kashering called kibolo kach palto. The way the taste was absorbed is how the taste is released, how we get it out. Kibolo, how it was swallowed, kach palto, is how it is spit out. So how it's absorbed is how we get out the taste. So the two main ways that we do this is hagala, pouring boiling water, and that's called iru roschin or hagala. You immerse a fork in a pot of boiling water, or you pour boiling water, as we'll speak about, on your sink. And the other is you burn out. So when you have an oven, the oven absorbed in the walls. How did it absorb in the walls? Through heat. So you have to burn it out. And what we'll be discussing today is what's called libun kal. Libun kal is getting to about 450 to 500 degrees for 45 minutes. I do want to caution people when kashering, if you've done it before, you know exactly what you're doing. If you haven't, then be careful. You know, you want to wear shoes. Sometimes you want to wear gloves. Sometimes some people wear goggles. So now we're going to go through step by step how to get the taste out of things. Sometimes it's too time consuming to get the taste out, and we're just going to tell you, cover. You don't get the taste out, you just cover. So counters. Your counters, there is a way to kosher, but many times it's just easier to cover. So we tell people, for countertop, clean very well, cover. The cover should be something heavy duty. It should be waterproof. It should be something that will stay there. And then once you cover it, you can put a hot item directly on the covered countertop, because you have this heavy duty waterproof item on top of a clean countertop. You can put your pots directly on that. Koshering, and we're not going to, if you have questions, you can ask me about what you can kosher. CRC and OU are much more makel about what can be kosher. They allow koshering for mica. Stainless steel, granite, quartz, everybody's in agreement that you can kosher. I never want to say everybody's in agreement. Most are in agreement you can kosher. The way to kosher a counter, assuming it's a material you can kosher, you clean it, you make sure 24 hours have elapsed since hot chametz has touched it, and then you pour boiling water directly on the entire surface. You can't have water spill over, because by the time it spills over to the next section, it is not boiling anymore. You have to pour directly on every surface. I recommend, it's hard to do this with, it's a little unwieldy with a pot. We have one of these Israeli kumkums, and you put it on the mechanism, it boils, you pour, and you put it back on, and you can do one piece at a time. In the past, maybe 10, 15 years, a lot of people have asked me about these steamers. Steamers, if they're industrial grade, many times they are okay for koshering. It's hard to say without seeing. You cannot kosher with steam. You can only kosher with real boiling water. So an industrial grade commercial steamer, many times it's hot enough, and real water, when you hold it there for long enough, will come out. But it's hard to say without actually testing it and seeing it, because we don't kosher with steam. I have a list from CRC about all the different types of countertops that you can kosher. If you have a question, anything beyond stainless steel, quartz, and granite, which are the three most common questions I get asked, you can send me an email or call me later. Refrigerators and freezers, no need to line them. You just need to clean them. You're not eating directly on them. You're not putting food directly on them. You must clean them. And then you can put your pots and pans directly on them, because we're not nervous that something hot, that hot food touched it. So you clean it and you're fine. Some people do line them, that's okay. But you just need to clean it thoroughly, the refrigerator and the freezer. The ice maker, you just want to empty it out and clean it, and new ice is made, and that's fine. Your cabinets, clean well. You don't need to line them. Some people do line them. That's fine, but they do not need to be lined. Your dining room table, clean. One waterproof cover is enough. Towels and tablecloths, you want to really wash if you're going to eat directly on it in hot water and soap. If you're nervous about using hot water, Postcom allow using warm water and detergent, assuming there's no visible food stain. But many people, if they're going to eat directly on the tablecloth, get new ones for Pesach. Or if not, they wash it in warm water and then they put a plastic down on top, and that would be okay. The very thin throwaway tablecloths, you have to be careful if it's coated with a powder. But I think I haven't had that problem recently. You know, when I started giving the shiurim 16 years ago, a lot of them had some powder coating and you had to be careful. High chairs, those are terrifying to clean. They are really one of the most difficult things, but they can be cleaned. So you can clean your high chair, and then you need to line the table, the tray table. Sinks. If it is a stainless steel sink, you can kosher it, right? It absorbed chametz through hot chametz that touched it directly, hot water, or things that soaked in the sink for long enough. So you have to assume your sink is chametz stick and maybe even treif. So we kosher it for Pesach through what's called Irur Roschem. We're going to pour boiling water. And here, similar to what we said for your countertops, assuming that it was one of those things that you can kosher, you clean it, you make sure 24 hours have elapsed from the last time it was used for hot chametz, and really, there's a person should try not to use the sink for any hot water for 24 hours. Just, you know, but that's a chumra. Assuming it hasn't been used for chametz in 24 hours, you then boil your water in a kosher lePesach pot or a pot that has not been used in 24 hours, and you pour boiling water directly on every part of the sink. There is a minhag that after you pour the boiling water, at the end, you pour cold water. Okay, that it is, if a person has their sink spout, the minhag is also to clean it and pour boiling water on the sink spout. Porcelain sinks cannot be koshered, so you want to get a basin and put the basin in there and keep your dishes in the basin. Some people get a rack and a basin. An enamel sink is also, you want to put, we don't kosher them for Pesach. You want to get a liner and a basin. Now we're up to stovetops. So for your electric stovetop, so I'm not talking about glass stovetop right now, your classic electric, the coils, you turn it on, it gets red hot. Once it gets red hot, you're good to go. That is hot enough that it burned off anything that it has absorbed. With your stovetop that is grates, that the grate stovetop, you need to put that in the oven at 450 or 500 for 45 minutes. The areas in between the burners, so we're not really koshering that. So you just want to clean it, and any food that falls there, you're not going to eat because, you know, you haven't koshered that. So the grates, you kosher putting them in the oven. The coil, you kosher by just turning it on if it's fire, or turning it on if it's electric. But the areas between the burners and under the burners, you're not really cleaning. If you cover it with foil, then, you know, that's good enough, but you don't have to cover it. You can just, you know, not use anything that falls there, which is what many people do anyway when they use a stovetop for milchiks and fleishiks. A glass top oven is a little different. You want to turn on each burner independently, and that koshers that area. But then you haven't koshered the areas in between. You've only koshered the area that got red hot. if you want to kasher the whole glass top, the poskim I follow allow pouring, after you've turned on each one individually, they allow you to pour boiling water across the glass top stove. I've never had people have problems with that, but some kashrus agencies warn that it could crack it. But again, I've never had that problem. Oven. So easy, but not always recommended, is just self-clean. So you self-clean your oven. Many say you still need to clean the door because self-cleaning doesn't get hot enough on the door. You clean the back of the door, you turn it on self-clean, you don't have to clean anything else in the oven, and it gets hot enough, 800 degrees, 750 degrees, whatever it gets to, it burns out everything. The reason I don't recommend it anymore is because too many people told me that self-cleaning their ovens broke their ovens. I don't know why they make self-cleaning ovens and everybody has these problems. So maybe the only thing I can think of is they anticipate that people cook once a year for Thanksgiving and they self-clean their oven every few years. And therefore, you know, it's good enough. They didn't anticipate what we do in our kitchens and how often we're koshering things. So if a person wants to self-clean, you know, that's the easiest. But you have to make sure that, you know, it's caused problems for people. So if you don't have a self-cleaning oven or you don't want to self-clean your oven, so here you need to clean well. There is a chumra you don't have to do, but many people do. They let their oven sit for 24 hours, meaning that you can't kosher before the oven hasn't been used for chametz for 24 hours. So chametz, the oven hasn't been used for 24 hours. You need to clean it well with oven cleaner. And cleaning well doesn't mean that you get off every spot. Sometimes there's something that's burnt on, that's discolored. That's not a problem. It means anything that has some kind of substance, your oven cleaner, and the EasyOff does a pretty good job when you let it sit overnight. You clean it, and then you turn on to 450 or 500 for 45 minutes. That's it. Convection oven. You kosher the same way. You just, you know, there you have to make sure to clean it carefully. But same thing, you turn it on, you clean it well, turn it on to make sure it hasn't been used for chametz in 24 hours. If that's not possible, you don't have to worry about that. And then you turn it on to 450 or 500 for 45 minutes. Microwave ovens, if a person, you know, can't get by without it, there is a way to kosher it. But in general, I tell people, you know, better not to kosher them for Pesach. During the year, I do allow koshering them. But if there's a special need or somebody's always been doing it, you can contact me privately. I'll tell you how to kosher a microwave oven because it can be done. A Keurig, there is a way to do that. You can contact me as well. An oven hood. So the oven hood, if it's close enough, if it's very close that the steam, you know, when the steam goes up and, you know, it's dripping, etc., you really need to clean it and cover it. Otherwise, if there's a nice separation between your stovetop and the oven hood on top of it, then you don't need to do anything. Kiddush cups, even though we only put wine and grape juice and things that are kosher lePesach, they're washed in the sink, etc. So people do Hagala if they're going to use the same Kiddush cup. Hagala means that you boil up a pot of boiling water, either kosher lePesach pot or a chametz pot that hasn't been used in 24 hours, and water is at a rolling boil. You put the Kiddush cup in, take it out with tongs, and wash it off with cold water. Dishwashers. So dishwashers, I also don't encourage koshering for Pesach because of certain issues. If a person feels they need it, please be in touch. There is a way to kosher a dishwasher. Toaster ovens, we don't recommend koshering. Warming drawers, there is a way to do it. It requires one of those canned fuel that they use for chafing dishes. Again, if you need to kosher a warming drawer, be in touch with me. A hot plate. Hot plate, it doesn't get hot enough to kosher, but here's the way around that. Number one, we clean it after it hasn't been used for 24 hours and turn it on the highest setting, or it's only setting for a half hour. Then, here's the main thing, you want to double cover. You want to have your hot plate, then one cover of foil, another cover of foil, and then you're putting your stuff on it, and that's how you can use it on Pesach. Hot water urn. Hot water urns are hard to kosher, but according to the kosher agencies that I consulted, if your hot water urn is not washed with a chametz sponge and you don't heat up challah on top of it and it's not close enough to your stovetop that chametz is splattering on it, you can use the same hot water urn for Pesach as you do during the year. Washing cups, they're in the sink together with your dishes, at least the way most people treat them, and therefore a plastic washing cup in your sink, you should put away with chametz dishes and have new ones for Pesach. A metal one that you like, that you want at your in your kitchen, you can do hagala, you can put in a pot of boiling water. Retainers and dentures and anything for your teeth do not need to go in boiling water. You just need to clean them well before Pesach. We generally assume that we don't eat things that are hot enough, that your teeth have, your dentures or retainers or braces have absorbed chametz on that level. So you clean them well, etc. A ring, right? If you wear a ring, you want to clean well, preferably with some kind of cleaner, because you know, especially if you knead dough or you're preparing food with the ring on, so you need to clean it well before Pesach. People a lot of times have things in their brake front that they are not planning on using on Pesach. So you don't need to cover your brake front. You do want to, make a little reminder, a little piece of tape or a ribbon or something, so you know not to use that stuff. But you're allowed to look at dishes that have something absorbed in them that you wouldn't use. You're just not allowed to use it. Instant hot in the kitchen. Clean well and pour boiling water on it. One interesting thing that they recommend is vacuum cleaner. You don't know what kind of stuff was picked up by the vacuum cleaner, probably dust and crumbs, but could be something that's really edible. And therefore, even though you've done mechiras chametz, the minhag is to try to empty your vacuum bag before Pesach, because as part of bedikas chametz, and getting rid of all your chametz. Medicine and cosmetics. We said from the OU that they're okay, with the exception of lipsticks. Purell is fine. Lipsticks do need to be researched. You don't need a new lipstick for Pesach, but you should research what is kosher for Pesach when it comes to lipsticks. The minhag is also toothpaste and mouthwash. It's interesting. We're not so machmir to make sure toothpaste and mouthwash is kosher, but we are machmir to make sure toothpaste and mouthwash is kosher lePesach. So you can have a mouthwash or a toothpaste that is treif, but it's kosher for Pesach. And the reason is you're not really eating it. So therefore, there's some who can justify using it during the year and also using it on Pesach. Chumra to Pesach, we try to make sure toothpaste and mouthwash are kosher for Pesach. I'm going to be coming back to that in a few minutes. Just quickly, a lot of times people buy new utensils for Pesach. So here you have the halachas of Tvilas Kelim. So it's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah based on Parshas Matos, that when something is manufactured by a non-Jew and then a Jew wants to use it for serving food, for clay seuda, when it comes into Kedushas Yisrael, it has to be immersed in the mikvah. Nothing to do with kashrus. It's not about kashrus. It's a brand new knife that the non-Jew makes, sells, never used it, never absorbed taste. It's about Kedusha. Before you use this for your food, you need to immerse it in the mikvah. On the D'oraisa level, they were only talking about metal utensils, metal clay seuda, metal utensils used for preparing and eating food. The rabbis added in glass, and glass includes Pyrex, Duralex, Corel, Corningware, all of that is considered glass. So glass and metals, there's you know, five different metals that the rabbis discussed that are chay of daraisa. So metals and glass, and things that are part metal and part glass, those also need to be toveled in the kelim mikvah before you use it. So that means china and porcelain and earthenware and stoneware and bone and paper, wood, all of that, rubber and plastic, none of that needs to be toveled. Pots that are plugged in, your something that is only used when it's plugged in, there is a machlokas haposkim. Generally, all the kashrus agencies that I called, about four of them, said that they do recommend immersing your sandwich maker, your urn, and just letting it dry for 72 hours. Back when I was learning these halachas in Kolal, one of the members of our group he bought a popcorn maker, and before immersing it in the mikvah, he called the company and said, "My popcorn maker fell in the bathtub, what do I do?" And they said, don't worry about it, just let it dry for a week. They told him a week, but all the kashrus agencies I called do recommend immersing them. If somebody's had a bad experience who doesn't want to, anything that doesn't work without being plugged in, the Chalkas Yaakov is makel and allows you to use without being tovelet. Things that are used for one-time use, like what we call foil pans, they're made really to use, you know, not forever. So that is a machlokas, because some poskim saw them, they said, you know, it's really, you can use them for a long time. The reason they're disposable is because of our standards, not because of how they're made. If a person was careful, they could use it for weeks. So if a person is so wealthy that every time he uses his pot, this is how some of the poskim speak, he throws it away, would you say that you can use the pot without toveling it? But at the end of the day, the poskim that I spoke to, for many reasons, Nachum Rabinovich says, these things that are not, people generally do not keep them for a long time. They use them for a couple times at most, two or three times. Then they do not need to be toveled, especially if you're using it without really cleaning it properly between uses. You have a foil pan that you're using for a few batches of the same thing, that certainly doesn't need to be toveled. But even if you're going to use it several times, but you know, the nature of this is that it's disposable, poskim say you do not need to toveled. There's a lot more. Any specific questions, you can speak to me. The proper way of toveling is you make a bracha al tefilas kelim, and before you tovel, you dip your hand or hands in the water. That way you don't have to let go of the item. Because you've dipped your hand in, we assume your hand is still filled with some of the water, and then you immerse while holding it. Otherwise, if you haven't dipped your hands in, you have to let go. And that's why if you look at the bottom of the kelim mikvah, there's usually a lot of forks and stuff that have dropped. But you don't need to. You dip your hands in, then you hold on. You're not supposed to hold super tight. You're supposed to hold with medium grip, and then it's fine. You wash it off and you use it. Let us quickly. Questions I always get: bottled water, unless it's flavored or has vitamins, it's okay. So all bottled water does not. It can be, you know, pure water, purified water, unless it's flavored or with vitamins, it's okay. If you're not buying milk with a special kosher for Pesach hechsher, you need to buy it in advance of Pesach, so that if there's anything in there that is a problem, it will be batal. There's bittal of lach belach, something liquid with liquid, in advance of Pesach. There is no bittal on Pesach. So milk, you want to buy in advance. There is a chumra to buy eggs in advance. I imagine there would be fewer eggs bought this Pesach than other Pesachs. Soy milk and almond milk are definitely kidneyos, but you also have to get something with kosher for Passover certification to make sure there's no chashash chametz as well. Important to know, anybody who needs, sometimes people need a product called Ensure. Ensure is Kitneos, so it's okay for somebody who needs it because they're ill or elderly. You just have to check a list and make sure that this flavor, etc., is endorsed as chametz free. There is an ongoing machlokas about paper plates, using them for hot. I follow the majority opinion of the kashrus agencies. You can use paper plates. You don't have to worry that maybe in China they coated it in something that's chametz. Starkey is a little more machmir. That's why you see people being machmir. But the OU and the CRC are makel. So I do allow paper plates, paper cups for hot, etc. Parchment paper does need to be kosher for Pesach. Pets, as I said at the very beginning, if you have a pet, the best thing is to find something chametz-free. CRC, Starkey, and OU have lists of pet food that is okay. And one important thing to know, that sometimes things are marked kosher dog food. It doesn't mean a Jew is allowed to eat it. It means a dog is allowed to eat it. Your dog's allowed to eat it because you're not allowed to benefit from milk and meat. So basar b'chalav, you're not allowed to feed your dog. You're not allowed to feed your dog chametz on Pesach. If your animal does need to eat chametz on Pesach, you have to sell, and it's a little complicated. So when you sell your chametz, you have to tell the rabbi what kind of animal, where it is, what it needs to eat, and then arrangements need to be made. You can't just have a non-Jew feed your pet chametz on Pesach. Mefurish in Shulchan Aruch that's aser. You're not allowed to have your pet be fed with chametz on Pesach. Very quickly, the measurements. 3 ounces is what a kos needs to hold for your dalet kosos. Most of our kosos hold a lot more. You need to drink a majority of 3 ounces for every kos. So you do not, even if you have a 7 ounce cup, you still need to drink only, there's a hitter to drink 4 ounces out of the 7, but meikar adin, you just need to drink 2, majority of the 3. A shear for matzah is depending on how thick. With our thin matzahs, and the matzahs seem to be getting thinner and thinner, about a third of a hand matzah is what you need for the two achilos that are daraisa, that's motzi matzah and afikomen, and a quarter of a hand matzah for korech, so a third and a third for the two daraisas, and a quarter for korech. Machine matzah is about two-fifths of a machine matzah for the two daraisas, and a little less than that, maybe a third for korech. This year, very quickly, if you'll indulge me 5 minutes, Erev Pesach Shechal B'Shabbos. So number one, we already spoke about that we search for chametz a night in advance because it was impossible to search on Friday night. You're not allowed to hold a candle. That's when they made the mitzvah, so we do it with a bracha. That is when the optimal time to search for chametz this year is Thursday night, the night of the 13th instead of the night of the 14th. We move the fast of the firstborns also to we actually move it 2 days. We move it instead of Erev Pesach, it's going to be Erev Pesach. It'll be on Thursday because we don't want to set up fast days on Friday if we don't have to. And the optimal time, I'm going to send this all out to do Bedikas Chametz, is after 8:23. If it's tough to get the kids involved that late, you can do it after 7:55 p.m. Normally, we say bitul chametz when we search for chametz, then we say it again the next morning when we burn chametz. This year is a little different. We're going to say bitul chametz after we search for chametz on Thursday night. We're going to have burning of chametz on Friday morning, even though you can still eat, just because for consistency, so that we don't change the time. It's the normal time to burn, but we will not do bitul chametz on Friday morning. Bitul chametz is done on Shabbos morning before 11:50 a.m. So the last time you're allowed to eat chametz on Shabbos morning will be 10:32, which is why we'll be davening very early on Shabbos. And you need to do bitul chametz before 11:50 on Shabbos. The sale that I am doing will only, it works. I'm going to be selling approximately 11 o'clock on Friday morning. anything that you are intend to eat on Shabbos, you're leaving out of the sale. You can't just put it back in your cabinet. It was not sold. Therefore, if you leave out bread, then you have to eat all the bread or flush the remaining bread down the toilet. And this brings us to how to eat Shabbos meals this Shabbos. So you've already sold your chametz. You're allowed to exempt chametz that you want to eat on Shabbos. You have to eat three meals on Shabbos. So, and ideally, your Shabbos meal should have bread, lecha mishnah. So one way of doing this is you leave out some regular bread. Well, regular bread makes crumbs. People have found that rolls and pita make fewer crumbs. So one option is to leave out some small rolls that people will finish, small pitas, and what they don't finish, you can flush down the toilet, etc. The another option is to use egg matzah. Egg matzah is really only a possibility for Ashkenazi Jews. Sephardi Jews will not use it as lecha mishnah. They don't make hamotzi on it. But Ashkenazi Jews can use egg matzah. There's a question how much you have to eat. But, I'm generally not so machmir. You want to eat, again, that two-fifths of a matzah at each meal of the egg matzah. And that way, egg matzah, we don't eat it on Pesach, but it's not chametz. You're allowed to own it. Somebody sick is allowed to eat it. Elderly, a child is allowed to eat it if necessary. So egg matzah, you can have the crumbs around, and that's what I've eaten in the past times that it's come out like this, to use egg matzah, and that way you don't need to have any chametz in your house. The last thing we'll discuss is there's a chiyuv, pashtus it's derabanan, but it's based on psukim that you're supposed to have a third meal on Shabbos. Now, the third meal on Shabbos, we paskin, says in Shulchan Aruch, is supposed to be in the afternoon. Now, we have a problem, because in the afternoon, you can't eat bread anymore. And we don't even eat egg matzah in the afternoon. There are some who do. Generally, people don't eat egg matzah in the afternoon. How do you eat your third meal in the afternoon after 1:40 p.m. when you can't eat egg matzah and you can't eat bread? Says the Ramah, the minhag is to eat meat, fish, or fruit. You can't even eat mezonos. You can't even eat Pesach cookies because you're not supposed to eat matzah or matzah derivatives unless it's cooked matzah. So that is what the Ramah says. There is a chumrah, 150 years old at least, and this is what everybody does, so this is what I'm encouraging, that there are some Rishonim who say you can eat the third meal already in the morning. Not the majority opinion, but there is an opinion who says you can eat the third meal in the morning. So what is recommended is you split your morning meal into two. So we'll eat daven, let's say, approximately 7 o'clock this year. People will get home around 9, 9:15. You sit down, you wash, you eat your egg matzah or pita, you eat fish, whatever it is. You then bench, you leave the table, you clear, you leave the table, you go walk around the block or you go to another room. 15 minutes later, the two shirim I saw is 15 minutes or 30 minutes later, you sit down again, you wash, right? Like Groundhog Day, deja vu, you just did this, you wash, and now you eat your main course. And as long as you don't have to bench by 10:32, as long as you've eaten your bread by 10:32, which is the last time you're allowed to eat chametz or eaten your egg matzah by 10:32, you can continue the meal for the next four hours. But you should know that is not your real shalosh shudos. That's a chumrah shalosh shudos. Your main shalosh shudos is sitting down in the afternoon after 1:40 and eating intentionally for l'shem shalosh shudos, meat, fish, bread, something a little more substantial, but meat, fish, or fruit. Something a little more substantial, l'shem shalosh shudos. You're not allowed to prepare on Shabbos for after Shabbos. So usually when you do a lot of preparations for the Seder on Erev Pesach, this year Erev Pesach is Shabbos. So you can't prepare, you can't set the table. You certainly can't do malacha, but you can't set the table, even things you're allowed to do on Yantiv, you can't do on Shabbos. But you are allowed to take a nap. Which that's why I'm looking forward to this year. I think last time I was never that well rested at my Pesach Seder because you have a whole Shabbos ahead of you. You've eaten your breakfast was your lunch at 9 o'clock. You sleep and then you're finally awake for the Seder. You're allowed to sleep with the intention of being awake for the Seder as long as you don't say, I am sleeping. I'm hereby sleeping to be awake for the Seder. It's okay. You want to grind the horseradish, roast the zroa, grind the ingredients for the charoses, and mix the salt water on Erev Shabbos. It's best to do that in advance. Anybody who's going to prepare, let's say you're setting the table before you've davened Mariv, you want to say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh before, like usually we say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh LeChol before doing Malachan Motzei Shabbos. This year, going from Shabbos to Yantif, you say Baruch Hamavdil Ben Kodesh LeKodesh. I'll send out the rest about Kiddush and Havdalah. Questions I'm always asked about garbage removal. When you're in the county, I think your garbage is picked up on Friday. It's perfect this year. Our garbage is picked up on Wednesday morning. So any chametz from Wednesday, Thursday, it can't be in your garbage can, right? It's your property, unless you want to include that with the mechiras chametz, which isn't, always so recommended. So what I recommend is garbage is not chametz, but if you have real bread, you want to pour some caustic cleaner or something on that bread. You want to leave it in a bit of a separate bag. What poskim do allow is you can put your chametz, if you live in the city, you can put it in your green bins that don't belong to us. They belong to the city, and put them in the street. Now, the downside is it's not going to look good for the Jewish community that everybody has their green bins in the street from Friday morning till the next Wednesday, but that is acceptable. I have a list. I'll be sending it out. I just want to say quickly, any medicine in the form of a pill that you swallow whole, that is allowed to be taken on Pesach without any Pesach certification, right? They do warn if it's something with a sweet coating, maybe to worry about it, but most medication, if it has no taste or a bad taste, a pill that's swallowed, 100%, you can swallow it on Pesach. It's okay. Vitamins that are swallowed, if a physician told you to take vitamins, it's fine. If you're doing it on your own, and there's no specific health concern and a medical professional wasn't involved, then you should make sure that the vitamins have kosher for Pesach certification. When it comes to syrups and chewable medicines, I'm going to send out a list. You can look at Star K, has lists as well. Toothpaste, mouthwash, and lipstick, because they're put around our mouths and we don't mind that they're in our mouths, those are things also need to be checked to be chametz free. All Scop is chametz free in terms of mouthwash. Cool Mint, antiseptic, and zero alcohol, Fresh Burst and sensitivity, alcohol-free Listerine is okay, and a lot of toothpastes are okay. All Colgate, many Crest, Pepsodent, Sensodyne, and AIM, Arm & Hammer are okay, and many Motrins and Tylenols are okay. Motrin Children's Suspension, all flavors are okay. So I'm going to be sending out that list, and I think we will stop here. Wishing everybody Chag Kasher V'Sameach. I know we got through a lot. We covered a lot, but hopefully this will make your Pesach a little easier to prepare for. I'm looking forward to Pesach at Shomrei. I hope everybody else is as well. And I hope everybody, wherever you are, wonderful, wonderful Yantif. Enjoy, and it should really be the basis for a wonderful year ahead, everybody.
Amen. Okay. Thank you.